International on campus today and tomorrow, and you might have noticed that their theme is freedom from homosexuality through the power of Jesus Christ. And we're delighted to welcome Mike Ensley this morning, who will share his testimony with you. Please join me in welcoming Mike.
Thank you. Well, as you've heard, I'm Mike. I work with Exodus International, and officially we are the largest Christian information and referral ministry in the world that deals with the issue of homosexuality. I personally work in our student ministry department, developing resources and ministry programs for teens and young adults struggling with homosexuality. And you may be wondering, why do you work there? Why would you choose that as your job? Well, it's a long story, and luckily that's what they wanted me to share with you. So I'll go back to the beginning, basically. And generally I'll just tell you, as most of the people who work with Exodus, my background comes from a struggle with homosexuality. And so that, obviously, the work God did in my life brought me to want to, you know, expound and deliver that work into other people's lives as well. People wonder, okay, well, why did you struggle with that? Did you choose it? Were you born that way? Is it something in your biology? Honestly, I would guess that the answer is very complex, and it contains some of all of those things. I can tell you that as a little kid, I was very sensitive. I was very keenly aware of things on an emotional and a thoughtful level, very, very introspective. I remember as young as age 5, things would happen. I would observe how my family related to one another. I would observe other people and think very deeply about it. I'd go into my room when I was 5 years old, and I would just sit there and ponder everything that happened. Of course, children have no context to put things in, and so I was left to what resources I had at 5 years old to come up with my interpretations of life. But I know that's the way I was. I was born that way. But it wasn't until when I was about 8 years old, my dad and I had trouble relating. It wasn't that he was abusive. It wasn't that he was distant or any of those things. There was something that made our relationship difficult. I actually pulled away from him, and I never knew why for a long time. But I remember when I was 8 years old, he decided to take me to try out for Little League Baseball because he thought that would be a great bonding activity for us. I had never played baseball before. I had never owned a baseball. I remember one Saturday morning we were doing that instead of watching cartoons, and I thought, well, this is a bum deal. So we go out to this ball field, and there's all these other little boys, and we start playing ball, and it was terrifying. I'd never had things thrown at me before. I was raised that you didn't do that. And so I didn't know how to I just reacted the way I was natural to me. I screamed and ran. And all the other little boys were like, "What's with Princess?" you know? And that's when I first started getting called names like, you know, "You're a little girl, you're a faggot, you're a sissy." And I was very introspective about that. I would think about that. They're just responding to the way I play the game, and I do play it differently than they all do, or they all seem to know what they're doing. And as I said, kids don't have a context to put anything in. So, and kids often assume that their experience is, you know, the universal truth. And so I figured that, gosh, everybody was brand new to the game that day, and nobody had ever played it before, and their dads all brought them and dropped them off, and everybody knew how to play except me. What's wrong? And that's when I first started to think, well, maybe something's different about me. Maybe something's wrong. And I remember from a very young age being very acutely aware of my desires and longing for affection. I remember looking at older boys and just being fascinated with them and wishing they would play with me and hold me and things. But nobody ever did, really. I never had a brother at all and never had an older male in my life that I felt really comfortable with who expressed any kind of interest in me. And that was something I always wanted. And as I went through school, I got picked on a lot. And so I developed a very isolated private life. I developed a fantasy life, basically, where I met all my relational needs. I disappeared into books during recess. And And it often involved that desire to have that mentor-type relationship, an older brother or a best friend that I never had. And then puberty came along, and that fantasy life got a little weird. And because of problems I was having in public school, my parents put me into homeschool, so I became even more isolated. It was actually a relief not to have to endure teasing and intimidation. But I became obviously much more involved in this fantasy life and very, very isolated, but also very sexually confused. My dad had given me the talk about sexuality. He said, you know, your body's going to do this, and this is what it's for, and don't do it till you're married. And I thought, well, that's the easiest promise I ever made. I was like 9, so I didn't know what I was getting into. But pretty sure I can keep from doing that. I had no context to understand what was going on with me sexually. As I said, my fantasy life, all my desires still revolved around that unmet need to connect with other guys and to be taught and accepted. And when my sexuality came along, it wrapped itself around that desire as well. And it was really tough when I was probably about 12 or 13 when I began to really realize something is very wrong. And the way I'm supposed to be feeling for girls, I feel for guys. And, you know, it's something we see a lot in our culture, and it's something people joke about, and it's funny, and it's just a quirky little aspect of American life. But I can tell you, for a kid growing up in a Southern Baptist community in a small town, and a preacher's son, no less, it's pretty terrifying when you find you have these feelings, and there's nothing you can do. And obviously, I tried a lot of things. Obviously, tried praying. I heard about homosexuality before. I mean, growing up as a kid, all I knew about gay men was that they wore women's clothes and lived in San Francisco, and I was like, well, I don't think I'm one of those, but I remember how people talked in church about homosexuality. It was always just dismissed as, you know, this horrible issue is something evil, sinful people do, and of course, people like that go to hell, and that's why there is a hell, and good riddance to them. And so you don't want to go like, hey, I think I struggle with that, you know. So it became my secret sin, and obviously I knew that how God felt about it and how the church felt about it, and it seemed pretty easy, you know. I was like, okay, God, you don't want me to be this way. I'm perfectly okay with not being this way, but you're the one with the magic wand, so help. And he never did that. The feelings never went away through prayer. They only got stronger and stronger. And so I felt a little betrayed by God. Why are you letting me become something that you hate? And so that was a very confusing, lonely time. Went back into high school, public school. In the meantime, I had tried to fix myself every way I could, and part of that was becoming as manly as I thought I could. And as, you know, with most teens and adolescents, all I knew of, you know, true masculine identity was all about surface, shallow stuff. So I trained myself not to act real feminine anymore. I started lifting weights. I grew my hair out. I was really lucky. I was able to grow a beard at like 14. And it was cool. I was a freshman. Everybody thought I was like a senior. It was neat. But so on the outside, I had pretty much repaired this little sissy faggot image that everybody had of me. But inside, all of that was still wounded. All of that was still unfinished. And I still had all those longings, and nothing really had changed. And I go into high school, and I've actually made my first group of friends through drama. And obviously, if you're familiar at all with drama crowds in secular public high schools, there were some people who identified as gay in there, and one of them was a gal who became one of my best friends. And she actually came out to me when she was coming out of the closet, you know, doing that whole process. And she was the only person in my whole life that I even had an inkling that I was safe to tell about my struggle. And so, but obviously she was not a Christian. She was somebody who embraced homosexuality. And she introduced me to this whole new mindset that God made you this way, and it's beautiful, and there's nothing wrong with you. And I got to tell you, I mean, it didn't jive with what I knew about Scripture, but having lived several very lonely, very desperate years believing God was mad at me and there was nothing I could do about it, This sounded like a reasonable alternative, to just kind of explain away five or six little scriptures that nobody really knows a whole lot about anyway, and accept this thing that I can't change. So I began to experiment with that that mindset, slowly started to come out one by one to my friends, and eventually, like I said, I lived in a really small town in a rural community, so there weren't any other gay guys in my school, at least not out, but eventually at a party I was introduced to somebody like two towns over who was the first other gay guy I ever met, and got involved in my first relationship. And I gotta be honest, it felt wonderful. It was the first time I knew anything like masculine affection that made me feel good, that, like I said, my dad, whenever he gave me affection, I always wanted to pull away. There was something weird about it. It was something wrong. I didn't like it. And so this was the first time I ever felt like a man was interested in me. And he was older than me. He was out of high school, so... He kind of embodied that older brother thing that I always wanted too. And so got involved with this, and obviously my parents found out eventually, and they were thrilled. They started taking me to therapists right away, and it was funny. I mean, they even took me to Christian therapists, and I remember sitting down with a Christian therapist for one meeting, and he told them, "Look, your son is gay. I'll help you deal with it, but I'm not going to try to change him." And, you know, in his defense, that is the way our culture has been forcing the therapeutic community for quite a while now. But, you know, God bless my mom. She wouldn't have that as her answer. So she eventually found a ministry, an Exodus affiliate where we lived, or near where we lived anyway, and it was called New Creation Ministries. They got their name from that scripture you heard just a moment ago. And they had a lady who specialized in working with youth, and they took me to see her against my will, and I hated her. And but she claimed she was a lesbian, or had used to be a lesbian, and now she wasn't, by the power of Jesus and all that. And I was like, yeah, I've already tried the power of Jesus, didn't do much. But she actually built a rapport with me, and we got to talking, and I, you know, eventually thought she was okay and whatever, but I was still going to pursue this gay thing. And meanwhile, I graduate high school, got into college. We moved actually to be closer to this ministry, so we moved to a larger metropolitan area, obviously a much larger gay community. So I was able to get involved a lot deeper with that and pursue my desires as much as I wanted to, really. But I got to tell you, as much as I did what I wanted to do, there was this wall that I kept hitting that was two things. One, my spiritual conviction. I never was able to convince myself that God is completely cool with this. I heard all of the scriptural arguments people, you know, who were in the lifestyle and said they were Christian, that they had. I never bought it. I just, deep in my heart, there was part of me that was like, no. It's not true, and it doesn't fly. And part of it was just a personal conviction, like, this isn't right. There's something wrong with this. There's always something wrong with this. The other was that I didn't seem to be getting what I was really looking for. Obviously, I had the sexual urges, and I could gratify those if I wanted to. And there was the emotional highs and something like intimacy that I could acquire through gay relationships and in the gay community. But again, part of my heart, and again, kind of a separate issue from spiritual conviction, was just still hungry. It was like there was always this wall I hit where it really felt like, this isn't what I came here for. And slowly, the things they were saying at Exodus started to make sense. I had been going to the ministry off and on, and, you know, heard all the things, well, like, there's always a rift in the relationship with the Father, and, you know, you're seeking your masculine identity in the gay lifestyle, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, it was all this yada, yada, yada to me until it really started to resonate in my life. And one of the first times that started to happen, our group leader had us make a list of all the things that we found attractive in people of the same sex. Like, what are you attracted to? You know, what does your ideal boyfriend have physically, personality-wise? And I could make that list pretty easy. I've thought about it a lot. And, you know, we talked about that and put it away. And a couple weeks later, she had us make another list, and she's like, what do you feel insecure about in yourself? What would you change if you could? all aspects of your, you know, your being. And so I had all these physical things, of course, that I felt insecure about, and all these personality traits I thought weren't very good. And then she pulled a trick on us, because she pulled out the old list and she compared them. And I looked stunned at two identical lists. And all this stuff they had been feeding me about, you know, this is all about your wounded male identity and your insecurity as a man that you're trying to repair through homosexual relationships, started to actually make sense. It wasn't just rhetoric, it was like real concrete, look at this happening in your life. And I didn't turn straight right there, but it really got me thinking. And I started to ask God, okay, what's your agenda here? What are you trying to tell me? And started to kind of treat him like he's God again, and start to ask him, well, what if my behavior is wrong, what's wrong with it? What's the matter here? And with the help of Exodus, I began to see that I wasn't different. That was a lie that the enemy fed me really early on, as I shared. Another thing that God did, if completely apart from Exodus, is my family went up to Montana to visit some extended family up there that I'd never met, and I had a bunch of little cousins, little boys aged 3 to 11, like five of them, and, you know, I was like 20, 21, and they thought I was the coolest thing that ever happened, and they, you know, jumped on me. They wanted to wrestle every minute of the day. If we were walking or hiking, they wanted to hold my hand. If I sat down, they jumped in my lap. They just wanted to. And I was looking at these normal, regular little boys exhibiting all the desires I had as a little boy, to looking up to an older male figure and wanting to touch him and be accepted by him and play with him. And God took this event and showed me. He was like, all little boys want that. It was just that nobody ever gave you that. And so you went on wondering why, and you got it into your head that you weren't supposed to want that because nobody gave it to you. And Exodus helped me to see how that ongoing unmet need stayed with me through puberty. And you know, God designed us very intricately, very delicately, but, you know, all that Adam and Eve and the apple stuff is just to go to show you that we're all out of whack. And so it does, the process doesn't take place the way it always should. And so my sexuality, which is designed to come into a boy's life when he has developed a sense of sameness with his dad, and a sense of admiration for his dad, and a acceptance and sameness with his peers. But if you don't have that, what do you do with your sexuality? I mean, it doesn't you know, delay in coming just because your emotions aren't ready for it. But it attaches itself to your deepest curiosities and desires. I began to realize how that had happened and how my homosexuality at the root was really a God-given need that every guy has. Except it had just become something else through my development. And that gave me hope, because now God wasn't just this mean God who created me gay and said, well, you can't do anything about that. You know, that what do you do with that? If you're just gay and you have these desires and God just says no, how do you have a relationship with him? How do you live? How do you be intimate with others? But God was saying, don't do that, because I created you with this other need that's very important that he cared about, and that if you remember is what you really wanted, and I care about that, and I'll address that in the way that I've always meant to. But you have got to say no to what your desire has become. And so I had a reason to say no to my desires, and I had hope that God cared about my needs and the pain that I felt. And Exodus didn't just introduce me to this God who said no to homosexuality, okay? God, through my Exodus group, it was actually one of our ministries that focused on a whole range of sexual issues. So I was in groups with men who struggled with heterosexual porn addiction, multiple affairs, you know, you name it. And began to see that their issues were a lot like mine, and my struggle wasn't that different. And gosh, people who never had to struggle with same-sex attractions didn't just breeze through sexuality and relationships you know, all easy and fulfilled and just loving life every second of the day. But it was a struggle for everybody. And so life, while it didn't get perfect, it got less unfair. And God showed me through that, see, you know, my yoke really is easy and the burden is light when you're not isolated, when you're not keeping secrets, when you're not forced to keep secrets by your community. And so they kind of coached me in taking those first steps into manhood that I'd never taken as a child or as an adolescent. Emotional manhood, identity as a man, with God as my guide and with other men who were encouraging me along the way. But all of this happened in an Exodus atmosphere because the church was still too dangerous a place to talk about same-sex struggles because, you know, the churches I went to, everybody who, it was still the same attitude. Oh, that's so disgusting. Who would do that? And, you know, you don't want to, even when you're walking out of it and you understand what you're doing, it's like other people don't. You can't share with them. So Exodus became like a church for me, and that's not what we're supposed to be. And you know, my ministers encouraged me to step out and to find mentoring, and I was straight up told by my college pastor, I don't want to mentor you, when I told him what my struggle was. My church began a mentoring program for young men in our church, and they were really excited about it, and when I told the director of it what I struggled with, but I was looking for help in the church, he said, there isn't anybody in the church that I think of who I think would mentor you. And so there was a strong rejection, but and again, there were all those issues of, you know, the church is not God's answer. But God faithfully led me to a family, a Christian family that took me in, a man who mentored me, didn't just meet with me in his office at the church once a week, but took me home to eat with his family and play with his kids. And I got to see this family that didn't have the brokenness minded, that I got to see, build new perspectives on men and women and family and marriage and things. And I don't know, I stopped believing a lot of things and I started believing other things. And slowly, step by step, in perfect timing, God has dealt with my brokenness and shown me a lot of grace and rebuilt a lot of stuff that I thought was gone for good. So anybody here struggling with a secret sin, whether it's same-sex attractions, which the temptation's not a sin, by the way, it's rebelling and acting on it that's a sin, but you're not to blame for what you struggle with, or pornography or an unhealthy relationship or whatever. God is so amazing that even though he's perfectly holy and perfectly just, he came to this earth so that he could say, it's not as if we have a high priest that can't sympathize with our weaknesses. And if we sin, if we do sin, he stands in our defense. That's the God we serve. He cares, and he knows, and it's okay. It's okay to struggle. He expects that, and he's made a provision for you. Not to live the perfect life, but to give it your best shot, and to get to know him and everyone around you on the way. So I want to encourage you with that. I encourage you to be open with your community about what you struggle with, because your honesty will free others up. So please, be open, be honest, and have faith that God is as gracious as you dare to want him to be. Thank you for letting me share.